Welcome to the Cutter's Notch Podcast, a program created by Michael DeCamp, the author of Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch Studios, this podcast is focused on all things creative, with special forays into books and matters of faith. Join Michael as he catches up with an author, a songwriter, a painter, a comedian, or anyone working or supporting a creative endeavor. So turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this edition of the Cutter's Notch podcast. I'm Michael DeCamp, your host. I am joined today by a new co-host who will be in a recurring role as the co-host. She and my other daughter may trade off, or she might be the kind of the permanent co-host. We'll see. We'll consider this a test run for her and see how she does. But I'm welcoming, I'll try another English word. I'm welcoming my daughter, Angela DeCamp, to the show.
Hello, and thanks for having me.
Well, it's great to have you here. Angela is actually a trained radio voice. She had how many years of radio in high school?
It's high school radio. I did three, but I'm not using my radio voice.
No. Well, maybe let's hear it. Let's try your radio voice.
What would you like me to say?
Oh, I don't know. How about, Dad, you're the greatest in the world?
Now I feel like it's going to sound weird, but Dad, you're the greatest in the world.
Oh, see, that's very good. That's very good. And you also got, I think you got 1 year in a contest. You got like high ranking in the state, didn't you?
I got second in state, but I still feel like I was robbed.
Fair enough. So Angela joins us as a co-host. I've got a couple of announcements and, one announcement, and then I want to share about a book that I just read. But in a few minutes, we've got a guest today, author Linda Mansfield. So hello, Linda.
Hi there. Thanks a lot for having me on.
Well, thanks for joining us. And we'll get into that conversation in just a few moments. First of all, though, I wanted to make a book announcement. As you all know, I wrote the novel Abandon Hope, a Cutter's Notch novel. I published it in 2017 through a local publishing resource here in Indianapolis. And I parted ways with those folks probably just before the last podcast recording that I did. And I had hopes to find another publishing avenue. And it actually came through within a couple of weeks of the last recording. Actually, it was in process during my last recording, but I couldn't say anything because it wasn't a done deal. But I am now published by Winged Publications, specifically their division of Journey Books, J-U-R-N-E-E Books. They're an imprint of Winged Publications. I have a 3-book deal. So Abandon Hope now has a sequel lined up. I have a deadline of May of 2020 to get that manuscript to the publisher. I hope to have it done long before that. I'm well into the story now and hopefully have the story finished by Christmas and then have it refined and ready to go closer to February or March. So that's the goal. Idea being that the sequel for Abandon Hope will be out sometime next year. Then there's a third one that I have a deadline of March 2021. That's going to be aggressive. So I'm going to have to stay after this in order to meet that deadline. But I'm excited about that because it's a new situation. This publisher is very responsive to me. She's been very helpful, and I'm excited about where this is going to go. So that's the news for Abandon Hope. Now, my other reoccurring thing that I like to do at the beginning of a podcast is I like to share about a book that I've just recently read. And I just finished, I just finished one of Linda's books, but I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to let her talk about those. But I just, between the last podcast and this one, I read a book on my iPhone. I got it through Apple Books. It was a free download. I think the hope is that I get the first one free. I get hooked into the series and then I buy all the rest of them. Right. But, and we'll see, I may do that because I enjoyed this one. It's called Maniacal by C.M. Sutter. And, basically I'll just read you the little blurb. It says, sleepy little North Bend just woke up. The newly promoted Sergeant Jade Monroe and her partner, Detective Jack Steele, have just been informed of an unidentified male body found at a local lake. The town is in an uproar. The victim was nearly decapitated, and murder simply doesn't happen in North Bend. As more bodies turn up, the single connection between all of the victims becomes clear. It's Jade herself. With each new victim getting one step closer to Jade, time begins to tick away. She must find the person responsible before her loved ones or herself are targeted next. Note, all Detective Jade Monroe's books are standalone stories, yet they're best read in chronological order, which makes it a really good thing that I got the first one.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. It was a good story. It was fun. So I probably will. I gave it 4 out of 5 stars on Goodreads. So I probably will get the...
Why not 5?
It didn't like blow my socks completely off. You know, I don't know about you, Linda, and of course, Angela, if when I'm kind of rating a book, it's awkward. If I don't know the author at all, then it's like, okay, then they got to blow my socks off if they're going to get a 5, right? I mean, I think I read one of the classic novels. It's like one of the most, I can't remember which one it was now, but it was one of the most famous authors in the world, and I gave him 3 stars. That's just crazy because they're awesome. But the story didn't blow my socks off, you know, and it's each person's take on it. And so it's really a conglomeration of the ratings. But I gave it 4 out of 5.
4 stars is a great review, I think.
It's still pretty good.
It is. Yeah. You know, as an author myself, I really like anything a 3 and above, mm-hmm. right? My personal view is if they only want to give me 2 stars or less, then I'd prefer they not. Just don't review it, but
yeah.
But I'll take anything 3 and above. Right. Has that been your experience,
Lynn? Yes, I'm fine with a 3. Of course, I'd like a 4 and a 5, but I'm fine with a 3. It's your honest opinion, and it's just like the Oscars when I disagree with what the experts say almost every year, and I have my favorites, and they have their favorites, and life goes on.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, and if you have too many 5-star ratings, and people kind of sort of think that you're stacking the numbers.
Right.
My book has got a lot of 5 stars and I love that. And a lot of them are people I don't know. But
Dad, if you want, I'll give you a 2-star rating to balance it out.
Three would be preferred. 3 would be preferred. I don't like it, but you know, nobody really does. But on my ratings, there are a number of 5 stars that are people that I don't know. And there are people that I do know. So it's like, okay, the ones that you know that give you 5, you have to take that a little bit with a grain of salt. But when somebody doesn't know you and they really love the story and they give you a lot of a high rate, you know, you really appreciate that. So anyway, that's enough of that blattering. Is that a word?
It is now.
Blustering about ratings. But yeah, I gave Maniacal 4 out of 5. Really enjoyed the story. So if you like exciting detective kind of stories, it was a pretty good book. Pretty good book. So, okay. Well, let's move on into our interview today. So today with us is Linda Mansfield. And Linda is, where are you from, Linda?
Pennsylvania.
Really?
Pennsylvania. Well, mm-hmm. I read, you know, your books are a collection of short stories.
Right.
And then I do remember one or two of them I just finished 12 Stories for Fall.
Okay, that's the last one.
Yeah, I started with the last one first.
That's okay.
Because it's the season, right?
Right.
The season. But there were some stories in Pennsylvania in there, so that kind of explains that.
Right. So. Yep. I'm Pennsylvania born and bred, and spent 23 years in the New York City metro area, where I worked for LaBar Friedman Publishing, which is a business publishing house. So that gave me a little bit of background into producing these little books. But my basic background is as a reporter and a public relations representative for motorsports.
Oh, okay.
Makes sense that you're here then in Indianapolis.
Yeah. It's really funny, though, because most of my clients don't live in Indianapolis. But when I moved to Indianapolis, I thought, well, this is the place to be, you know.
Yeah.
It's a big sport. So, but anyway, I'm the I have Nolan Racing, which is a local team, which has Cody Swanson as the winningest driver in USAC Silver Crown history, and he won that driver championship again this year. And Johnny Heidenreich and Mike Hagenbottom and Ryan Tevetter, who's an American trying to make it to F1 over in Europe. And I'm the PR director of Gas City I-69 Speedway, a little north of here.
Okay. I didn't realize there was a speedway up there. So
it's one of the best tracks in the Midwest.
Really? Well, yeah. See, that shows how much I know about it.
You learn a little bit new every day. That's why we do interviews, right?
That's right.
There you go.
Yeah, I can't say, you know, obviously growing up in Central Indiana myself, I'm intensely familiar with Indianapolis Motor Speedway and the Indy 500. Mm-hmm. But you get beyond that, and I don't really have a lot of knowledge of the racing world.
It's huge. And, of course, I love being close to IMS. It's one of the most magical places on Earth. And Doug Bowles didn't tell me to say that. I really believe that. And I'm also a reporter for Speedsport Magazine, which is one of the leading trade publications in motorsports. And I hate to admit this, but I've been a reporter for Speedsport for 41 years. I was the first woman ever hired for an editorial position there. And I'm still writing for it. So it's a freelance gig for me now, but I enjoy it. And have a story in the December issue and November also. So. I'll have a story in the January issue too.
Do you get to travel some with that? Do you get to go places and see things?
I used to travel all the time, but motorsports PR and journalism has changed a lot. And with the internet and live timing and scoring and live video feeds, a lot of my clients prefer that I stay home and take my notes from the internet and then call them with my questions and get their quotes afterwards. And that way it's not as expensive for them because they're not paying my travel expenses. But I used to be on the road all the time.
Okay. So your PR firm, that's located in Speedway, right?
Yep. Good old Restart Communications is the name of it.
Okay. Restart Communications in Speedway, Indiana. Mm-hmm. And is it 100% focused on motorsports?
Not really. I've branched out a little bit since the 2008 recession. I've had to branch out. And I do some work for the Back Home in Indiana Alliance, which is a non-for-profit group that is funded by the Governor's Council on Disabilities, I believe. I'm screwing up the name of it, but it's a not-for-profit that helps disabled and elderly people find affordable and accessible housing. I do help with their newsletter and do things like that. And I also have a part-time job as the communications coordinator for North United Methodist Church, 38th and Meridian. So a little bit of everything.
Wow, cool.
Is that the really pretty church?
Yep.
Yeah. I was like, I think I know which one that is. I always like wonder at it as I drive by.
Yeah, it's absolutely spectacular. And it has a huge pipe organ, and it has wonderful musicians that attend there. And I always say when you go to North United Methodist Church, you come out feeling like you've really been to church.
Yeah, yeah.
So I like it.
That's awesome.
Very good. Now, working in the PR world, that can be a very creative occupation itself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, people think, well, you know, it's not just spinning details to a company's favor, but it's actually creating an image, right? And helping to propagate that image.
Right. And also doing everything you can to promote that. In the case of racing, that driver and that driver's sponsors and interacting with the fans, because it all goes together. The sponsors don't want to be involved unless they're getting something out of it. So you're one of the avenues that make sure that they will get a bang for their buck.
Mm. Do you know Mario Andretti?
Not really.
Well, I've been very close to Mario. He doesn't have a clue who I am, but I've been very close to him because I about knocked him on his tail one time. I went out to the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the first time I ever got to go to the track for a practice. Mm-hmm. The company I worked for had, they used to have badges that you could get into the garage area.
They still do.
Yeah, the bronze badges. They never had the silver one, so I never got any real access. But the bronze ones let you get into the garage area. And my wife, before I headed out there, she goes, if you see Mario Andretti and you don't get his autograph, you may as well not come home.
Wow.
Jeez, Mom.
So, yeah, your mom, Angela, your mom she still is a big Mario Andretti fan. And, of course, I'm standing in the garage, and then I see him. I see him over there by the gate in between the garage gates and the...
You're just like, oh, no, I have to do it now.
Well, there he is. I have to go get it. And so mm-hmm. I went running up to him and took one step too many and banged right into him.
Oh, Dad.
I did. But you know, he was gracious. He was very gracious. He went ahead and gave me the autograph. I apologized, of course, but I thought, I almost knocked him down, as crazy as that is. So,
well, he, although I don't really know him personally, I of course have known of him for, long time. And everybody says he's very gracious, and I know he feels that when someone asks him for an autograph, it's an honor for him to sign it, and it is further helps promote the sport, and he's all about that, and he's a great ambassador for IndyCar racing especially.
Yeah.
Well, I'm glad you didn't take him out.
Yeah, that would have been bad. yeah, Mario Andretti is out of the race because somebody just broke his leg. No, I'm glad I didn't take him out either, because my wife would have.
She would have been very upset.
Yeah, I would have had to deal with that when I got home too. So Linda, you've got these books.
Mm-hmm.
Did you just wake up one morning and you thought, I want to do more than write articles for magazines. I want to write a book. How did that come about?
No, the first book, which is Stories for the 12 Days of Christmas, came about due to bad driving.
Bad driving.
I'm an Apple girl, and I needed something for my Mac at the Apple store over by the Fashion Mall in Castleton. And it was about this time of year, and I headed over there, and I was looking for a parking space, and there were these women in great big black SUVs trolling for parking places. And they cut me off. One of them almost hit me, and they were all in a real funky mood. You could tell that they were not enjoying the holidays at all. Yeah. They were totally stressed out and not having a good time and missing the whole point of the holidays. So I thought, what could I do to make people have a better experience in the holidays? I just read a survey done by Yelp, I think, that said 49% of Americans say the holidays are the most stressful time of year. And that's just sad, you know, because it's supposed to be, Thanksgiving is supposed to be a time for Thanksgiving, and Christmas is supposed to be a time for family and celebrating Jesus's birthday. So, they're just missing the boat with all the consumerism. So anyway, I thought, it takes a long time to write a novel. I don't know if I can even write a novel. I don't even know if I could write a short story, because all my work is getting all the facts right. And if there's a mistake in one of my magazine articles, it's an honest mistake. I mean, I try my very best to be absolutely 100% accurate. And of course, sometimes, I'm human. Sometimes I screw up, but, that's my goal. And I thought, I don't know what, I haven't done any creative writing since college. I don't even know if I could make up a story, but let me go home and try it. So I went home and I knocked out one story, and I thought, that wasn't too painful. I wonder if I could make 12 of them for the 12 days of Christmas.
Ah.
So I thought, let's try it. So I knocked out 12 and enjoyed it. And then being an overachiever, I threw a 13th in there.
And so you got a baker's dozen
right,
on there.
Okay. So you have a baker's dozen of stories for the 12 days of Christmas. So I produced that. And then I was taught, the great thing about self-publishing is you can talk to a lot of really knowledgeable people about it. They're very open. And the man who runs Smashwords and over in England, it's the largest ebook distributor in the world. I sort of sent him an email sort of asking for some advice. And he came back and he said, well, you wrote one book, great, but the best way to sell one book is to write another book. Because then you show up double in the search engine results. And I said, oh, well, I don't know if I could write another book. You know, I didn't know I could write that one. So let me think about this. And then I thought, well, what if I took the same characters from the Christmas book and marched them through the other seasons? I wonder what would happen then. And before I knew it, I had 12 stories for spring, 12 stories for summer, and 12 stories for fall. And since there's 13 stories in each book, there's 52 stories in all, or one for every week of the year if you pick up the series.
Okay. Neat. I like that. So now I started with the last one. I did the 12 stories for fall. Does that mean if I go back and like next month, or this podcast is going to come out in December, so it'll be right around Christmas. If I pick up the 12 stories for Christmas, will I be meeting the characters from the stories I just read?
Yes.
So, yes. Okay. But so I'm just reading them in the wrong order.
That's all right, because they all stand alone too.
Right.
But if you read them in order, you'll go, oh yeah, I sort of remember that, you know, from something. But my whole thought in writing short stories instead of a novel was it would give people a 10 or 15 minute break to read just one short story, depending on how fast of a reader they are. But it would just give them a little break from their day. I was thinking about those ladies in the SUV. If they had this book in their bag and they finally got parked, they could pull the book out, read a short story for 10 minutes, calm down, and start over and go into the store and hopefully enjoy their shopping.
That's such a good response for road rage. Yeah. I usually gesture. I'm trying not to. But I've been up there during the holiday season, or even just like on a Friday night, and parking is cutthroat up there. So yeah. I just feel like it's such a great way to use that frustration to create.
Well, the funny thing is the parking garage was practically empty, but, you know, they didn't want to park there, or they wanted to park.
That open lot.
That open lot.
They wanted where they wanted. Yeah. And that's what they wanted.
Exactly. So anyway, that's how this whole thing got started.
Yeah. Well, you know, and I, as you say, I did read, or as I said, I did read the 13 stories in the fall book. Mm-hmm. And, I did find them, kind of a relaxing but interesting read. Now, I did read through your foreword, I think it was in the, or maybe it was a pro, well, whatever your introduction is at the beginning, where you said, well, you hadn't done before the fall book, you hadn't really done mysteries or scary and kind of ghost stories or kind of things. So you had a little bit of that in the fall book.
Right. The first three books I tried to make as realistic as possible. Just because I was trying to reach as many people as I thought. I was trying to be appeal to as many people as I thought. So there's an even mix of male and female main characters, and they're just light reads. There's nothing heavy about any of this stuff. Right. And when I was thinking about the fall book, I was on a racing internet radio show called Autosport Radio with a host on K, and he said, well, I like mysteries. Do you think you can write any mysteries? And I said, I don't know. I haven't ever tried. So anyway, a few of the stories in here are mysteries, but there's nothing that's going to keep anybody up at night.
You know? Yeah, it's like you're not going to scare them and make them lose sleep.
No.
My book's a little scarier, I think. I'm a little bit on the scary side. I probably would make
I think some, you try to push it a little.
I pushed the edge a little bit. But, I really enjoyed the stories. And they were very very relaxing stories. Even the mystery and the scary stuff that you have in there is just, it's kind of a relaxing way of reading. So
wonderful. That makes me very pleased. Thank you.
So I enjoyed it. So folks out there, if you're looking for a good series of stories just for a relaxing read, maybe you're going to go on a trip and you just want something to read by the pool. You know,
A lot of travelers really like these.
Yeah, they're small. They can fit in your bag if you're flying somewhere too.
Right.
Yeah.
And you know, you have 10 minutes while you're waiting for your plane and you just rather than just sitting there and people watching, you could, you know, get a little something pleasure out of this.
Yeah.
I definitely get more out of reading when I travel than like looking at my phone or something. I mean, I know that there's always something to look at on your phone, but there's something about looking at a book, an actual tangible book.
That's the big debate, right? E-books versus paper books. I'll use either one or the other. Like I read this book that I introduced at the beginning. I read that on my iPhone and I've got a Kindle, but I still just love a good paper book in my hands. That's the way I like to read.
Yeah, so. I do too, but I have a Kindle and I use it. You can't beat the price, you know, of an ebook compared to a print book, but I like print books best.
Yeah, me too.
Well, we definitely do. You just built and on the other corner of the Cutter's Notch Studios in your living room, they just built a wall of bookshelves that house all of your collection. I just like the atmosphere of having books around. So.
Yeah. I have a little bit of a book collection. I've seen much bigger collections, but if I had kept every book that I had had in my collection originally, I would need about four walls of bookshelves in there.
Yeah. I have books everywhere. And my to be read pile is
growing.
Terrible.
I feel you there.
So, you wrote your first book of short stories. Mm-hmm. Did you write all four books before you published it, or did you publish them as they came?
I published stories for the 12 Days of Christmas first, and then it was 2 years later that I published the other three.
Okay.
So
that's the first one, and then you took some time and wrote the other three books and published them all together at once.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you mentioned being self-published earlier. So is that's your self-published author?
Right. Unless you have a following already through some other form of life, like unless you're Martha Stewart doing a cooking book or Oprah doing anything.
filing her nails.
And you write a book, you have no track record. You have no following, and publishing is a business, and publishing houses want to know sales projections, and it's very hard to be discovered. So, you know, person like this. And I've also found that unless you, even if you're a small writer in a big publishing house, they're not going to market you that much anyway. You're still going to have to do a lot of the footwork yourself.
Right.
What they have going, traditional publishing has going for them is they have the distribution channels. And if they like your work enough and they decide to promote you, they're definitely the way to go. But with me, I just wanted to see if I could get them done and get them out and see if I could even do it. Because like I say, I'm trained as a journalist, not as a literary author. So my form of writing this is a big departure for me. I didn't know what show don't tell means, you know, until I got into this.
Right.
So I had a lot to learn. But with my publishing background, I knew a little bit about layout and design. And I went to a course at the Indiana Writer Center that was run by Brad King, who was a professor at Ball State at the time. But right now he runs Carnegie Mellon University's publishing house. And he suggested that I try the press roots approach, and it was ideal for me. Pressbooks is a Canadian company. You write the story, you get it edited professionally, and then you upload your material into their software system, and it produces the files as a PDF, as a Mobi, and as a ebook format. And then you can go right from there to Amazon and you know, post your book on Amazon as a Mobi file. You can go right on Barnes & Noble's website and post your book as an EPUB, and then all the other distributors. I mean, I'm a publishing house in Australia is selling my books, you know, just through that. And it costs all of $100 for to use a book, use that system. And they often have sales where they'll go down to $65. So you can get all that formatting done for $65.
And what's the name of the company?
Pressbooks.
Pressbooks.
Yes, it's a Canadian company. And then I did all my covers myself with stock photography, which I have to laugh when people said, oh, I spent $3,000 on my cover. And, you know, I spent less than $20 on all four of my covers.
I might add, too, that they're feet. And I love the footwear on the fall stories. I'm like, where can I get boots like that? It's really cute.
It's a stock photo. And that all started with, I found the slippers for the Christmas book. And then I said, well, what do I do for my other stories? And then I go, well, I'll look for feet, you know.
It's online. A nice like continuity that you have. Yeah. There's sort of a kickback and relax kind of vibe from the cover.
Yeah. So, I mean, I didn't spend much money on this.
So this company, again, was
Pressbooks.
Pressbooks. They helped you with the layout?
With the formatting.
The formatting for publishing.
Right.
Okay. And then you did your own cover artwork.
Right.
And then you downloaded it directly to was it Kindle Direct or was it?
It was just
CreateSpace or?
No, I didn't ever use CreateSpace. No, I just uploaded my files to Amazon Author Central.
Okay.
And
that would go through their Kindle Direct program.
Yeah.
And then you also went to Barnes & Noble and did it directly there too.
Right. Okay. And I did it to a number of different sites. I mean, even the Methodist publishing house has my books, you know, because I just uploaded them.
All right.
So I don't know if they've sold any, but they have them.
They haven't sent any money that you know.
Yeah, right, okay. Right.
Well, cool. So, you know, this is part of the process of this podcast is how do people get from point A to point B? You know, a lot of times people think that writing the book is the hardest part. And what I've learned through this whole process myself is that's really kind of the easy part. You know, you write the book or a series of short stories. I've got a few short stories too. I'm going to have to maybe put the collection
put
of those
an anthology
together.
Yeah, together.
Yeah,
there you go.
Actually, I've got a couple of them. I think I'm going to tag into my sequels. But at any rate, you know, I wrote the book, and then it's like, okay, what do I do with it now? Well, then there's a whole editing process. Mm-hmm.
You know, yeah, get the best editor you can find.
You want
and can you afford?
Well, I was lucky. I used a series of beta readers to help me with the editing. And one of them turned out to be a retired English teacher with a propensity of using a red ink pen. And good. She was very, very good.
I think you're scarred by that because you've mentioned that on a previous podcast.
I wasn't scarred. I was blessed by it. It was awesome. Mm-hmm. She just did a fantastic job. And all the others added things as well. I used something from everyone. That was awesome. And then I paid for a professional edit when I was setting it up for the actual publication. Mm-hmm. Which remarkably actually ended up with a couple of errors in it from the process of the editing. That ding, if you may have just heard, is because I didn't silence my cell phone. Shame
Michael
on me.
Michael DeCamp.
Shame on me.
I want everyone out there to know that your sound off on your phone.
Well, I do sometimes. I turn it off for church.
There you go.
I finally got it all done. And then there's the whole thing of, I was trying to do the traditional publishing thing, but you talked about how that's difficult to do if you don't have a platform.
Right.
And I definitely didn't have a platform. And, you know, you got to find a, you can't do the traditional publisher without an agent. And so you got to do these things in order. So you got to find an agent and you get lots of rejections. And then you got to, then you, once you get an agent, then you got to find, you go out and you start submitting to publishers and you get lots of rejections. But right. you just bypassed all that, went right to the.
Well, a good friend of mine in my time in New York was an agent. And I saw the amount of submissions that she would get all the time. And I would see how much time she was allowed, you know, could spend on making an evaluation of a manuscript. And it wasn't much. And it just kind of turned me off. And I thought, I have just as much luck finding an agent with a already published book, because they look at them and say, what if this, what if one of these takes off and sells a lot? They'll find me, mm-hmm. you know, if that happens. So at least this way, I'm doing something proactive to follow that dream rather than just sending something off in a manila envelope, you know, yeah. and hoping for the best.
Crossing your fingers.
And- yeah. yeah. And, you know, it takes an average of 3 years for a self-published book to hit, if it ever does hit. And that's, you know, the odds are just very small that you're going to, you know, make a lot of money as an author anyway. Mm-hmm. So I thought, well, at least this way I have tried it and I have, you know, I'm sort of controlling my own fate and I'm doing something about it.
I think it also makes a difference that you're doing it because you want to do it, not because you want just like to make a ton of money.
Love to make a ton of money.
I mean, we don't want to say don't. We do want money. We do want the money, but it's also something else to say that there's something more behind it. You felt a passion for it. You were inspired to do it. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. I mean, I tried to provide a service. You know, just some light reads for people to chill out and have some fun.
Yeah. Yeah. I, for me, I would love for my books to take off and that it would generate a, you know, a bit of a revenue stream, mm-hmm. As I approach those retirement years in the future. But ultimately, you know, you want the satisfaction of creating something that mm-hmm. somebody else gets some enjoyment out of.
Right.
And that really kind of almost means more than the money itself. Although, like you said, you know, mm-hmm. authors do like to be paid. Mm-hmm. We do like the money. So what would you like to tell us? Anything else you'd like to tell us about the books? Or do you, anything you want to share about the books themselves?
Well, I want to add a little PS. There's other ways to format books. Quark Express, which is a software desktop publishing system that I have, I could make an ebook from that too. So I don't want to say that Pressbooks is the only way to do it, but Pressbooks was very good for me because I didn't have any pictures in my books, so it was straight formatting. You know, I still don't know how a picture book would, you'd make that with an ebook with all the different ways an ebook is transfigured, you know, to fit different screens. That's kind of is a mystery to me. So I don't know. My books, I think that everybody would like them. And if you don't, you know somebody who would like them. And I think that they make a great little hostess gift or stocking stuffer. And they also aren't that expensive, you know. And so if you know, just want to treat yourself, I think you would find them enjoyable and just a sort of a way to give yourself a little break because we all work too hard and we all have too much going on.
Yeah. Give yourself a little Christmas present.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. Yeah. So where can they find your books?
Well, they're on Amazon. They're on BarnesandNoble.com. Locally, they're at Three Sisters in a Trunk in Speedway, Indy Reads Books in downtown Indianapolis, and as of just a few weeks ago, Roots to Wings Barn Market in Claremont. And I'm doing a book signing there in early December.
Okay. All right. Well, do you have a, is there a Facebook page or a website?
Yep. There's a website, lindamansfieldbooks.com. That has everything you're ever going to want to know. And then I have a Facebook page at lindamansfield-author, and I'm also on Twitter.
How do they find you on Twitter?
I think it's Restart LM Author, and my racing stuff is just Restart LM.
Okay, very good. Well, Linda, I appreciate you being here. The traditional way that I end these interviews is I have in front of you is a little plastic box.
Okay.
And in this box are a series of little slips of paper.
Okay.
And they have random questions on them. And so what I'd like for you to do is just pull one of these little ones, read it, and then...
You want me to think on my feet, huh? Well,
yeah, this is just for fun, so...
What is your favorite restaurant? That's easy. Dawson's and Speedway.
I saw you at Dawson's. That's right.
Yeah.
I don't know about Dawson's. What is this place?
It's on Main Street in Old Speedway, and I've never had a bad meal there.
What's the best meal there?
Well, I really like their, like I forget what it's really called, but it's like a stuffed chicken breast.
Ooh.
Yeah. And I get it with rice. It comes with, I don't know what it comes with, but I just tell them what I want and they make it.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah. And then they also have a really, really nice fish sandwich. But anyway, it's a very, it's a small restaurant. It's not, you know, not a big place, but it's, the decor is very nice. Lots of stained glass, light fixtures, and the man who runs it is really nice. And the foods, I've never had a bad meal there. It's always good. So
now I'm hungry.
I actually saw Linda in there about a month ago. Mm-hmm. I was in with a client in my other life, you know, in my
your business life,
my 8 to 5 Monday to Friday job. And we brought some clients, a client in there for lunch, and I look over and I see this familiar face. I'd actually never met Linda before in person, but I'd seen her on Facebook and I saw her, and we had talked about doing a podcast. So I just said, "Hey, I know you." And we said, "Hello." I sat at the next table, but I had a breaded tenderloin. They've got a good breaded tenderloin at Dawson's.
You do love a good tenderloin.
I do. For those of you out there in podcast world, I do love a good breaded tenderloin.
You're going to start getting tenderloins in the mail just randomly.
Well, that would be kind of weird.
Maybe a little gross.
Maybe, how about they can email me tenderloin restaurant suggestions.
There you go.
So author MichaelDeCamp@gmail.com if you want to give me a good breaded tenderloin suggestion. But yeah, Dawson's is awesome. I really like Dawson's as well. That's good. In fact, I was going to take you, Angela, last time we went to lunch, I was going to take you there if you hadn't suggested
Bearcats.
A Bearcat. Or Bear, is it Bearcats?
Bearcats, yeah.
And that's at the Stutz building?
Yep,
that's good too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Really. You need try Dawson's.
Okay.
Yeah, really
good.
Put
it
good
on
stuff.
My list.
All right. Well, Linda, any last words here before I do my little final send off?
I just want to thank you both very much for having me on. This is a real nice treat for me because I love to tell people about my book, and I'm hoping that someday I'll be discovered. So this is a step in that direction. So I appreciate very much the exposure and the time spent with talking to you.
Oh, awesome. That's really what my goal is, to give folks like yourself an opportunity for some exposure and maybe find a few more people for their audience. Mm-hmm. So, okay, very good. Well, I usually like to close it out with a passage of scripture related to creativity. I am going to cease from trying to do that on a basis where, I have a new one every time, and I'm going to try to be more, basically I'm going to have a theme scripture. This will be what I'll close out each of my podcasts with, going forward, at least for now, until I get tired of doing it. And then that's part of the heart of creativity. You can change.
You should ask your guests sometime if they have a favorite one.
Well, that would be a thought. But I think I might do that. I didn't ask you about faith, Linda. Do you have any, does faith play into your writing at all?
Or absolutely. The Christmas book, especially, before I wrote a word of it, I prayed about it. And before I wrote each story, I prayed that I would do the best job I'm capable of doing. And I was hoping that I could get my message across, especially in the Christmas book, in a way that wouldn't turn people off, but yet would still, they'd still know where I'm coming from. Mm-hmm. And I can't do anything without Jesus. So
all right.
There we go.
All right. Well, thank you for sharing that. Mm-hmm. A passage of scripture that I'm going to make the theme, at least for now, is Proverbs chapter 22, verse 29. It says, "Do you see someone skilled in their work? They will serve before kings. They will not serve before officials of low rank." And basically, I think what I'm trying to get across with that is, if you have some skills, some gifts, some things that you should be doing that you're particularly good at, if you focus your energy and you really work at it, you'll be noticed. You'll be noticed by those who are basically in positions to do something with it. So thank you everyone for listening to this episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast. Thank you, Angela, for joining me as a co-host.
Aye, aye, Captain.
If you all listen to the next podcast, we are actually going to have an interview with Angela, because Angela is a painter.
Ah.
So we're going to have a discussion it's kind of hard to share paintings across a podcast.
It's okay. I can paint a picture with my words.
Oh, there, see, that's what authors do. So she also is a pretty good writer, but she's not explored that in any formal format other than a blog so far, which her blog is a lot of fun to read. So I want to thank Angela for being here as a co-host. I want to thank Linda for being here as our guest. Remember, it's Linda Mansfield Books.
At lindamansfieldbooks.com.
Okay. Mm-hmm. lindamansfieldbooks.com. You can find her work on Amazon and on Barnes & Noble. And it's a series of books, 12 stories. There's 12 stories for 12 days.
Stories for the 12 days of Christmas is the first one. Then 12 stories for spring, 12 stories for summer, and 12 stories for fall. But if you just put Linda Mansfield in the search bar in Amazon or Barnes & Noble, I'll come up.
Very good. Do you have on Author Central, do you have your own little author page?
Yep.
I got one this week too. I have my own Amazon author site. So it's kind of cool. Each one of these little things just kind of gives you a good feeling.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thanks everybody. And we'll see you. Well, you'll hear us on the next episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast.
The Cutter's Notch podcast can be found through any podcast listing provider. New episodes will drop approximately twice per month. Connect with Michael at the following email address, authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Again, that's authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Abandon Hope. A Cutter's Notch novel can be purchased as an ebook, paperback, or hardcover through any bookstore, both online and local. Get your copy and start your own Cutter's Notch adventure today.